Why do politicians constantly use words like freedom, justice, and equality, yet seem to mean entirely different things? When Tony Blair wrote to philosopher Isaiah Berlin, confessing he wished he'd studied political philosophy earlier in his career, it wasn't mere intellectual regret. It was recognition of something profound. Without clarity about our deepest political concepts, we're navigating by fog. Adam Swift's political philosophy emerged from this gap, becoming a bridge between ivory tower abstractions and the messy realities of governance. What makes this work exceptional isn't just its clarity, but its refusal to dumb down. Swift treats readers as thinking citizens capable of grappling with hard questions. And in an era of Brexit, rising authoritarianism, and democratic backsliding, these questions have never felt more urgent. Two people arguing about taxes might both invoke justice, yet speak entirely different languages. Social justice emerged around 1850, focusing on how institutions distribute society's benefits and burdens. John Rawls revolutionized the field in 1971 by asking, "What principles would we choose if we designed society from behind a veil of ignorance, not knowing whether we'd be born rich or poor, talented or disabled?" His answer, equal basic liberties for everyone, then arrange inequalities only when they benefit the least advantaged. This difference principle recognizes that life prospects depend on genetic and social lottery. Yet Friedrich von Hayek dismissed social justice as meaningless, arguing market outcomes aren't unjust because they're unintended, like blaming weather for crop failure. Robert Nozick offered a libertarian counterpoint. If people freely pay to watch a talented athlete, resulting inequality is just. Both Rawls and Nozick agree people don't deserve their natural talents, yet draw opposite conclusions. This contradicts popular opinion, which insists successful people earned their advantages through hard work. The tension between desert, entitlement, and fairness runs through every debate about meritocracy, inheritance, and opportunity. For most of history, democracy was an insult, ruled by ignorant mobs who'd plunder the wealthy. Today, even dictators claim democratic legitimacy. Yet modern representative democracy, with infrequent elections and elite-controlled media, barely resembles ancient Athens, where citizens voted directly on legislation. Democracy exists along multiple dimensions: directness, citizens voting on issues versus electing representatives, accountability, recall power versus fixed terms, and equality, equal influence versus wealth-based power. Direct democracy seems authentic, but becomes unwieldy at scale, while representatives might make better informed decisions, yet remain vulnerable to corruption. Why value democracy beyond outcomes? Instrumentally, democracies avoid famines, protect rights, and generate prosperity. But democracy also realizes freedom as autonomy, Rousseau's insight that genuine freedom means obeying laws we give ourselves. Even if a benevolent dictator made identical decisions, we'd lack the self-governance democracy provides. The wisdom of crowds offers another justification. If average voters are more often right than wrong, majorities become remarkably reliable through Condorcet's theorem. Yet genuine equality requires more than voting rights. It demands equal opportunity to influence decisions through education, information access, and freedom from poverty. Modern democracies consistently fail this test. If you think liberalism means selfishness, minimal government, or moral relativism, you've absorbed decades of successful propaganda. Liberalism is actually a sophisticated moral doctrine centered on individual freedom and autonomy, fully compatible with deep concern for others and robust social institutions. The confusion runs deep. In America, liberal suggests welfare state support, while libertarians claim classical liberalism for minimal government. The first misconception, that liberals assume people are selfish, fundamentally misreads the tradition. Liberalism constrains egoism by demanding just and equitable treatment of others. From Mill to Rawls, liberal thinkers emphasize moral obligations and human flourishing. The second misconception, that liberals want minimal government, describes only one strand. While libertarians like Nozick advocate a night watchman state, philosophers like Rawls and Dworkin support robust institutions ensuring fair resource distribution. Critics claim liberals emphasize rights while neglecting duties, but every right creates corresponding duties. Your property rights create my duty not to steal. Welfare rights create duties to support social programs. The charge of moral relativism similarly misses the mark. Liberals firmly believe freedom, autonomy, justice, and human dignity are objectively important. They simply distinguish between foundational values and particular conceptions of the good life. Communitarians argue liberals ignore how communities shape individuals, but no serious liberal denies this social embeddedness. Liberalism readily accommodates communal values. It primarily governs state action, leaving citizens free to pursue deeply communal activities in private life. Isaiah Berlin's two concepts of liberty is often reduced to freedom from versus freedom to, but this misses his complexity. All freedoms contain both aspects. Religious freedom means freedom from state interference and freedom to practice faith. Berlin actually conflated three distinct contrasts that reveal how liberals can champion positive freedom without embracing totalitarianism. The first distinction contrasts effective and formal freedom. A poor person is formally free to vacation in the Bahamas, but effectively constrained by lacking airfare. This dynamic pervades education access, healthcare choices, and housing options. The second distinction contrasts autonomy, genuine self-rule, with acting on immediate desires. Resources increase effective freedom by expanding choices, but autonomy questions whether choices emerge from authentic self-direction. Education exemplifies both. It opens career paths while fostering critical thinking. Berlin's deepest concern emerges when autonomy incorporates Kantian divided selves, a higher rational self versus lower emotional self. Danger materializes when the state claims superior knowledge of someone's true self, justifying coercion as liberation. These distinctions illuminate debates over property rights and taxation. Redistribution can increase effective freedom by transferring resources to those with fewer options. We can promote autonomy through information access and opportunities, not by claiming privileged insight into people's true desires. Equality faces fierce hostility, accused of fostering dependency and class warfare. Politicians avoid the term, preferring opportunity or fairness. Yet, nearly everyone accepts citizens should be treated as equals, though interpretations differ wildly. Equality of opportunities consensus is illusory. The minimal conception prohibits discrimination based on irrelevant traits. The conventional conception demands prospects depend on ability and effort, not social background, requiring public education and inheritance taxes. The radical conception argues natural talents are equally arbitrary. Why should high intelligence guarantee better prospects? Each implies vastly different policies. Gender equality presents distinct challenges. Women earn less and hold fewer top positions despite educational advantages. The pay gap reflects both discrimination and workplace structures assuming workers without childcare duties, effectively organized around male norms. Women choose between career and family, men get both. Some goods have positional aspects where inequality inherently disadvantages those with less. Education has intrinsic value. Understanding Shakespeare benefits you regardless of others, but also positional value in job markets. For housing in good school districts, inequality automatically harms those with less. Three positions appear egalitarian without genuinely valuing equality itself. Utilitarianism supports equality through diminishing marginal utility, making it merely instrumental. Prioritarianism prioritizes the worse off simply because they're worse off, regardless of inequality. Sufficiency holds that ensuring everyone has enough matters more than equal distribution. Yet, these principles derive from premises about people's fundamental equality as citizens, deserving equal consideration. We live in an age of strategic vagueness, where politicians deploy concepts like freedom and justice as rhetorical weapons rather than guides to action. Political philosophy offers essential tools to examine concepts beyond their surface use, distinguishing genuine disagreements from mere confusion. Consider immigration debates. Are they fundamentally about national sovereignty, human rights, or collective obligations? Without philosophical clarity, we talk past each other endlessly. The same applies to healthcare, climate policy, artificial intelligence, emerging challenges where established frameworks prove insufficient. Philosophy identifies false dichotomies and reveals nuanced positions overlooked in standard discourse. In today's polarized landscape, where post-truth rhetoric substitutes for reasoned argument and echo chambers reinforce beliefs without examination, this clarity becomes vital. We need citizens who evaluate policies based on underlying principles rather than partisan alignment. The philosophical imperative isn't about replacing democratic decision-making with expert rule. It's about equipping citizens to think clearly about moral questions at the heart of politics. When we argue about taxes or immigration, we're arguing about what kind of society we want to build. Your vote is a statement about justice, freedom, and human dignity. Make it count by understanding what you're actually choosing.